This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Signature support from Subaru of Baton Rouge, SubaruBR.com. Robin Dow is producing, and the number to call is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk@talklouisiana.org. And through the years in doing programs of this kind in various iterations, Jim Donilon has been a frequent guest, and he has held positions in the state legislature and as insurance commissioner, and he was around before that in various capacities in Jefferson Parish, and goes back to being a student leader at the University of New Orleans when it was LSUNO back in the day. So, Jim, in just a few days, and this is December the 6th, so let's call it 33 days, he will be a private citizen for the first time in a while. What is your take on your change in life at the age of soon to be 79 years?
I'm very, am I on? Yeah. Oh, gotcha. Yes, sir. I'm very satisfied with my status as a retiring statewide elected official, honored by the people of Louisiana for the past 18 years to serve in a vital role in state government as their insurance commissioner. And looking forward to, I have three grandchildren in college in three different states, and I'll be seeing a lot of that those parts of the country.
Well, this job is somewhat of a thankless job, as we were talking just a bit before the microphones opened. You don't really make a lot of friends as insurance commissioner. And through the years, as we know, three of your predecessors have gone to federal prison, and they were all popular politicians at one point. I remember when Doug Green, when he was elected in 1987, people said, this guy's going to be governor someday, and it didn't work out. And, of course, Sherman Bernard held the job for 16 years, didn't he?
He did. And got elected as a house mover.
I remember.
West Wego, and Pecan Grove, actually, in West Wego.
What a character.
Promised, didn't know anything about insurance, he proclaimed when he qualified, but promised to lower premiums and didn't accomplish that.
No, and went to jail. And Jim Brown, who had a long and successful career, he wasn't convicted on major counts, but he was convicted on, quote, lying to the FBI and served 6 months. And you served with him, you served with Robert Woolley, and this was after being a state lawmaker. And lo and behold, you end up with a big job, and you've held it longer than anybody now.
Yes, and of course, I took office just a couple months after Katrina and Rita devastated our state and wrecked our market. And our market of last resort, the state-sponsored Citizens, was actually dysfunctional, and the CEO of that entity went to prison shortly after I took office, after I had replaced him. But we have really, really, and I'm so grateful to our former governor, Kathleen Babineau Blanco, who I served in the legislature with. And when I took office after Katrina, she stopped me in a hallway and said, Jim, whatever you recommend on insurance matters, I will support. And she was good to her word, and we recovered remarkably successfully.
Right now, there is a crisis, and it's not just a Louisiana crisis. It's all of these states that are in treacherous zones that have insurance issues, and we'll get to the property issues, which back in the day, we were talking about car rates, but now it's property, and for good reason. This is a crisis that could ultimately destroy our state if it's not resolved at some point, or at least the lid is not put on it. But some listeners have asked about this prospective sale of Blue Cross, largest insurer for health in our state. $3.5 billion slated for a foundation, and it's under challenge. This is a lot of money. What's your take on where this is going?
Well, as someone who was set to make that decision, as the law requires when it was filed in the summertime, I am loath to comment on my opinion of things in with the expectation that I'll probably end up being deposed at some point in the future, because whichever way the decision comes down, whether it's to approve the demutualization and the sale or not to, I expect litigation, and have said that for some time, avoided media requests as a result of legal advice I got from my longtime lawyer on contract to the department from the Butler Snow former Cantrell Spate firm, David Rubin, who's been representing the Department of Insurance for decades and recommended that I back off from making public statements. That said, it was set to be my most important decision of my career because it has significant implications for health care and health insurance statewide. $3.5 billion is a huge amount of money to fund a foundation with, and a lot of good can be done with that amount of money. But that decision will fall to my successor, who jokingly said a couple of months ago in an interview, what did he think? And his answer was, I hope Donlin does this before I take office. And I can understand why he felt that way. As a brand new incoming commissioner, it will be a challenge for him.
On healthcare, Blue Cross has pretty close to a monopoly in Louisiana.
I'd call it a monopoly, as Blue has in Mississippi and in Alabama, with over 70% of our market in each of those states.
And part of that is the fact that they have a good reputation. Part of it is that few people want to get involved. Certainly the Affordable Care Act has played a role in this. How did it evolve where Blue Cross has such power in a lot of states, but it particularly so in the ones you mentioned?
Yeah, that's a great question. And when I took office, it was probably 53%. Maybe I'm going from memory. It was significant. It was dominant, but it wasn't, quote, unquote, a monopoly as I perceive it today. But that has been the trend for the past decade. I made several efforts, to the disappointment of my friends at Blue Cross, to stimulate competition. For example, I went to former Governor Jindal to ask him to decide to give the group benefits, Office of Group Benefits for state employees, retirees, the largest single block of business in the state, to one of the competitors of Blue, Humana, Aetna, United Healthcare, and they ultimately got the contract. Blue Cross ultimately got it, strengthening further their position in the state. Nationally, it's become United Healthcare, Humana, Aetna in the second and third positions. Not very many states are as dominated by a single company as we three in the Mid-South are. But Blue Cross has, as you say, an excellent reputation and has done a lot of good for the state. But we all benefit when there's more competition in a market.
And this is something that will probably weave through the court systems, and sometimes that means that things are not done expeditiously. What's your take on how long it will be to work this out?
I think it will be done. The decision will be made relatively quickly, and I was prepared to do it with enough expertise and justification to defend it expeditiously in court, I do believe. I'm not privy to how Tim will approach it. I have confidence that he will do it objectively, of course, and I'm ready, willing, and able to help him with, and have discussed it with him in the several meetings we've had during the transition since the election leading up to his taking office.
And a listener notes, Jim Donilon, that the governor-elect, Jeff Landry, who also will take office on January 8th, he made it clear he was not in favor of this transfer as it was originally designed. And now the governor has some input, but ultimately this is an insurance commissioner decision, isn't it?
It truly is. And this has happened recently. Michigan acquired Vermont. Michigan Blue acquired Vermont Blue. This is not it's not an ordinary thing. It doesn't happen every day, but it happens once or twice a year across the market. Elevance, the acquirer, has 15 state blues now in their book of business. And the argument put forth by them is bigger is better. We can do things that Blue Cross as a single state company cannot do for policyholders, for research, others. The other argument, the other side, is local is better. And while I had the decision, we had input from the State Medical Society, from the Louisiana Hospital Association, opposing the plan as it stood before me.
Well, we'll see what happens. And I understand that you and Commissioner-elect Temple, your staffs are working together. And you ran a bruising campaign 4 years ago, but two men who seem to be of good mind and good cheer. So I would think things could be worked out for the betterment of our state moving forward as in a transition.
I hope so and think so. I truly do. And Jim, our relationship has been one I've had.
We'll be back. This is Jim Inkster, Robin Dow producing. You are listening to Talk Louisiana, and your number is 877-217-5757. Jim Donnellan with us, 8 days short of his birthday, and he will close his career as insurance commissioner at the age of 79, a long, long career going in politics in Louisiana, going back to his 20s, and along the way also for 38 years, I believe, was in the Louisiana National Guard. 33 years, and rose to pretty high rank.
Yeah, I retired as a colonel and the state in the judge advocate general for the state of Louisiana.
So he has been a true public servant and has always done it with good cheer. He's been on the right side of the political spectrum, and he's not shied away from tough races. He ran against John Berlinger Breaux in the year of 1998, and Breaux was a tough guy to beat. And as much grief as they gave Jeff Landry for not debating his opponents, and he did so once, Breaux didn't debate you, did he?
No.
He didn't debate you one time, and I thought he should have.
Well, you would think in the political arena that that would be almost you have to do it. But this was
for a six-year term, too.
That's right. Yeah. And John Breaux nor Jeff Landry have been the only ones to successfully avoid the debates stage. But I think it's unfortunate.
Well, and I'll give David Vitter credit. He was the front runner in 2015, and he chose to debate his colleagues on several occasions. Not all of them, but enough that he got hit 3-1. And unfortunately, once I was a moderator, and he thought it was 4-1.
Well, I know better than that. I've been before you.
Yeah, and you and Tim Temple had a memorable exchange at the press club.
That you moderated.
Yes.
And I stood and watched, I think in a restaurant, you moderate Mayor Broome and
Steve Carter.
Senator Carter. And it ended on a very congenial basis with the three of you.
Well, and I view Steve Carter and you very similarly. Both very conservative, but not mean conservative. And conservatism, perhaps unfairly, but for some has been viewed, and in fact, the old mantra, I'm a compassionate conservative, like you have to explain why you're a conservative. But you never did so, I thought, with animus. You did your jobs because you believed in a certain way of government, and you took your blows, and you claimed your victories, but you did so with good manners.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, and I do want to add, before I don't have the opportunity with time allowed at the end, my thanks to you for opening your mic every time I've asked to come talk to your listeners, and you have a loyal following out there that I bump into often.
Well, thank
and
you.
They compliment me for my participation with you on your show. Well, and maybe beyond that, Jim, I consider you a career-long friend, and I appreciate that.
Well, and likewise, and I know we will keep in touch. I thought maybe it would be appropriate for Clayton Kershaw of your Dodgers to retire at the same time you did, because in many ways I view you as similar. He's a guy who's been the best pitcher of his generation and gotten very little respect. He's had his problems in postseason, but when you look at his numbers, he's been as good as Koufax was.
Indeed. And he got rocked again in the playoffs this year, unfortunately. And he's a class gentleman.
And he's undergoing shoulder surgery. He's just had the surgery and planning to come back. He's going to miss most of the season, but it may be time for him to step away. And I knew when you said you could quit raising money that you weren't going to run. And you said there's a time, and I guess there is. But from the eye test, Jim is he's much younger than – he looks much younger than he is, but – some say actions speak louder than words, but you drive in from New Orleans, Metairie, every day. So not many people would do that of any age, but you do it.
I do. And I can truthfully say I've enjoyed every day of my service as insurance commissioner. And what I look back on so fondly is when Katrina and Rita wrecked our state, I think, the third most important person, well, fourth most important person in public office for the role of recovery. And that was behind the governor, our two senators. And every day I do something with a stroke of a pen that I, in my own best judgment, believe is in the best interest of the state. And I don't have to get it cleared by anyone else. As a regulator, I make that decision. I have oversight by the Division of Administrative Law, the judicial system, et cetera. But it is an awesome responsibility and one that I have been truly honored to have. And I will retire totally confident that I did the best that I could. And I look upon this crisis as why the folks reelected me the last time I ran 4 years ago.
Jeff in Spanish Town. Jeff, you're on Talk Louisiana with Jim Donilon. Good morning.
Good morning. And Commissioner, I want to thank you for your service for so many different ways, and understand you're retiring. But
thank you.
Thank you so much. I've got a question. You know,
yes,
since
sir.
You are, you always seem throughout your career pretty sensible, and you just stated that principle. So the Republican Party has spent, I think, over 2,000 lawsuits trying to dismantle Obamacare. The presidential nominee, maybe. Trump says he's going to dismantle it and have something better. Of course, he said that in 2016. Republicans have done nothing as health care. And I know it's a touchy subject, but reality is, what is your feeling on health, on Obamacare? If all the states would not have challenged it, what would Obamacare look like today the way it was supposed to be?
Well, I don't think it would look very different, because none of those challenges have ultimately proven successful. The only thing that has changed significantly is President Trump removed the tax penalty from the requirement that everyone acquire a qualified health plan, as it's called. And every state has a qualified health plan. We used the most popular version of health care coverage available for individuals from Blue Cross as our standard. Most states did it that way. So I really think all of that noise and money and effort has been for naught up until now. And I'm doubtful that there is a quicker, easier, more popular way of addressing what is a very complicated, challenging, and vital part of our nation's economy. But I don't think anything would be different if no challenge had been made. Once it was, and I will admit, it was rushed through the process because Senator Teddy Kennedy died and they didn't have a majority, a full filibuster-proof majority. Their majority the Democrats went from 60 to 59, and the bill was only halfway through the process. And so what came through, and as Speaker Pelosi famously said, we had to pass it in order to find out what was in it. That's not unusual in the process, I hate to say, but in this case, it was even more necessary from the advocate's point of view, because they didn't have the chance to put it in conference and overcome a filibuster.
And even today, though, there are many southern states who don't have it. Georgia doesn't. Florida.
Well, they have the Affordable Care Act. They don't have the part that gave them the option of expanding Medicaid.
That's right. Most southern states are poor. Georgia, Florida,
absolutely.
Texas, Mississippi. But Louisiana under John Bel Edwards took the money and we've got a high percentage of people who have benefited from it.
No doubt.
Mike in Villa Del Rey. Mike, good morning.
Good morning, Jim, Mr. Donlin. Mr. Donlin, I had a State Farm bundle. Haven't had any tickets, any wrecks, nothing. My vehicle insurance went from $1,300 a year to close to $4,000 a year. I'm no longer with Jake or State Farm.
All right. Did you get a different car?
I got a different vehicle, but I went to Allstate and got the same price that I'd been paying.
Okay.
And, you know, I just don't think the insurance commissioner's office is looking out for the well-being of the consumers in Louisiana.
All right, we'll get Jim Donald. We do have to take a break, but I'm sure he'll bite on that one and disagree with you, and we'll find out why. 877-21. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. Another segment with James Jim Donilon, who has a month and 2 days remaining as insurance commissioner, longest serving commissioner in the history of Louisiana, 17 years and 33 years in the Louisiana Army National Guard, almost 2 decades in the Louisiana legislature as a House member, graduated from Jesuit High School and the University of New Orleans Loyola Law School. He's been around for a long time, and when he was at the Capitol, he was there through the third and fourth terms of Edwin Edwards, of David Treen, of Buddy Romer, and he remembers 1991 when we had the race from hell. A listener asked about that. I think the turnout was 83%. This last race, it was 35.6%. Is that what it takes to get people to vote, Jim?
I hope not, and I would point back to the runoff between Vitter and Governor Edwards. I'm not sure what the turnout was, but I'm pretty sure it was above 50% at least.
It was right around 50, I think, okay. but even that was not what it should be. But before we hit the break, Mike in Villa Del Rey asked about rates for car insurance. He blamed you for higher rates, but he said he got a good rate from Allstate after not getting a good one from State Farm. That's Mike's experience. And he said his price went way up. He did acknowledge he has a different vehicle. But what would be the reasons for that, and how much are you responsible for any rate changes that Mike and others have experienced?
Sometimes I get calls from constituents, return all of my calls. And they say, I raise the rate for State Farm or another company. And I say, in 18 years, I have the authority to force companies, failing companies in jeopardy of insolvency. I've never done it. We've taken companies down and put them out of business, but a rate increase wasn't going to save those companies. Every rate increase I've granted, and almost invariably they come with some amendment, modification, a lowering, the company has initiated and asked for and submitted justification through what's called actuarial science. And in the most recent State Farm case, I approved a rate increase of 17% for auto insurance. It was filed asking for 18. We found a technical glitch in the filing and lowered it by 1%. But it was virtually entirely for their comprehensive and collision part of their coverage, not their liability.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the pandemic, they lowered their rates across the board 10%. Many companies did that. State Farm did it nationwide because everyone was locked down, miles driven dropped, claims dropped, accidents decreased significantly. But they have clawed back that 10% in two different filings of 4.5%, 5% each time. But I'm happy to look at that rate filing for Mike and see that it is being appropriately applied to him if he believes it's inappropriate. But the cost of collision and comprehensive coverage has skyrocketed due to inflation and the cost of equipment for repairing vehicles. The equipment is so much more sophisticated and protecting and saving lives, actually, with backup capability, lane changing capability, but it's expensive. And inflation has driven the cost of personnel significantly higher to do the repair work necessary. Other companies have followed suit with that same level of rate increase for comp and collision coverage, but State Farm was very high profile when I made that approval, when I authorized that approval. So 800-259-5300, and we'd be happy to look at the rate filing and compare it with his cost as he's describing it, which does seem way out of line.
800-259-5300. Our number, if you'd like to get in under the wire with Jim Donilon, 877-217-5757. Lewis downtown. Lewis, you're on with Jim Donilon.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Commissioner. I hope y'all are doing well.
Yes, sir.
I just wanted to call in. I have met numerous times with the commissioner, often to talk about what we perceive would be negative impacts on our members' health insurance or unintended consequences. Commissioner, you've always been most gracious to meet with us, researched our concerns, and done everything you can to make sure we weren't negatively impacting those people in their health care. And I just wanted to publicly thank you for that and thank you for your service.
Thank you so much, Lewis.
Lewis Wren of the AFL-CIO, usually not all that excited about Republican office holders. But,
and Jim, you'll remember this. My first race when I was 27 years old, I ran for district attorney of my home parish of Jefferson.
When you were 27?
When I was 27. Lost. It was close to John Mamalidis. But the AFL-CIO supported me in that campaign. And they sort of supported me in my last campaign 4 years ago.
Well, and you talk to everybody, and that's what public servants should do. Now, we haven't talked much about property insurance, and of course, that's been the big story the last few years, and it's awful in places like Florida and Louisiana. And is there any relief in sight?
Add California to that list.
California as well.
Yes, threatened with wildfires. There is relief in sight. Part of the reason I did not run for re-election is with the crisis that we have, I knew I needed help from the legislature, from the governor. And so I asked them to have a special session and a month before the regular session in order to get relief as soon as possible for those 10,000 folks insured renewing every year their coverage from Citizens, our market of last resort, and experiencing a 63% rate increase driven by the cost of reinsurance for Citizens, which had mid-term, mid-hurricane season, gone up by that much because their book of business had doubled as a result of the ongoing crisis. They did appropriate $55 million for incentive money that companies took and started writing. In fact, they've written almost 50,000 policies that have qualified to earn that money that they took, because if they don't do the required writings in the program and stay on that coverage for the minimum time, that which is 5 years, that is required to earn that money, it gets clawed back, mm-hmm. as was done after Katrina and Rita. That's the short-term fix to our ongoing crisis. And all of the trends, almost 25,000 policies have been taken out of Citizens by those companies, or not gone to Citizens. 5,000 policies left behind by UPC out of Florida that was doing homeowners business in six coastal states and went under and pulled out of, as they went under, six different states from New York to Texas, including 32,000 policyholders in our state. That's the, it worked after Katrina. It's working even better than it did speed-wise after Laura, Delta, Zeta, and Ida. But the long-term fix, I copied from Alabama. It's called Fortified Homes, and we're well underway with that program as well, having distributed $30 million worth of grants up to $10,000 for homeowners to take their existing roof off, replace it with a certified roof. We don't give the money to the policyholder. We give it to a pre-certified contractor. We have 80 on our books eligible to do this work for us under evaluators also certified by the department to measure and monitor the quality of the work that's being done. All right. It has been very successful in Alabama and will improve our market long term to withstand Laura and Ida level hurricanes.
Leslie in Hickory Ridge. Leslie, you're on with Jim Donilon.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Jim, I want to thank, first of all, for your show. I also want to thank Jim Donilon for being one of the insurance commissioners that we've had that's had the highest integrity, to my knowledge, in my lifetime. And I'm almost 69 on the same day as you, Jim. I have a birthday. But my question is, what changes do you foresee that Tim Temple will be able to make?
All right. What about changes that the new guy may make?
And he pointed when we ran 4 years ago to the fact that he is a former insurance executive with lots of experience in the insurance industry, has indicated a more company-friendly regulatory scheme. He and I disagree on some things. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. The public has elected him. He was elected without opposition and has a close working relationship with the governor. And we will see what those changes will end up being. There are a couple of things that I have publicly disagreed with him on in the past. In the two that I would point to is the three-year rule for protection of homeowners policyholders that's been on our books since 1992 and has served us extremely well. The top eight national writers writing in both Florida and Louisiana have in our state 61% of the business in our state, the homeowners business, only 25% in Florida. That's not me. I wish I could take credit for it. It's that three-year rule that a former Senator Jim Cox of Lake Charles passed in 1992. And I think I told Governor John Bel Edwards during the last session that if it is repealed, then within his lifetime, not mine, I'm 79 years old, citizens will be the insurer for Louisiana, and Louisiana cannot afford that. We collected $26 billion for hurricane claims, wind claims, not flood. After Katrina, Rita, we collected $23 billion for Laura and Ida after the hurricanes of 2020 and 13 months later in 2021. So I am concerned about that. We disagree. He has indicated that he doesn't want prior approval. We have that disagreement as well. But okay. Other than that, I...
All right. Well, we'll be back and spend a few more minutes with Jim after this. Jim Donilon with us for a few more moments, and then we'll segue to Lee Gilbo, who's the authority in Louisiana on rock climbing. But we want to get to at least one or two of you before we part company with Jim. Stuart downtown, I know you've been waiting the longest. So, Stuart, you have the floor. You're on Talk Louisiana with Jim Donilon.
Why, thank you, Jim, Mr. Donilon, and the audience. Good morning. Mr. Donilon, two issues. With Louisiana having allegedly the highest DUI rate and one of the highest uninsured motorist rates, why is it that citizens have to pay for this? Why not the individuals who, why not isolate those extreme costs to these individuals in violation of? And secondly, how can these carriers string people out in automobiles once all of the proof has been presented on the table?
All right.
Okay. Second question first, because generally there's a liability issue. And when there's a liability issue, everyone gets their day in court. They have a chance to come in and prove, hell, I didn't rear end that fella. He backed up at the red light into me to create an accident. Now, in most cases, I agree with you. It is dragged out too long, and the judicial system is too slow. As to why the DUIs don't pay themselves, they do pay. If you have multiple DUIs, you can't get coverage generally, end up in the state-sponsored market of last resort. As to uninsured motorists, our estimates from Motor Vehicle. I don't have the data, but Motor Vehicle collects it because they are the enforcement part of our state government for the mandatory insurance coverage that 49 of the 50 states require. And those folks really only number, according to Motor Vehicle, what is the national average between 12 and 14% of the uninsured. And I will finish with my chief actuary for decades actually was my predecessor's and his predecessor. I was with him last night at an event. Has said over and over again to study committees, if we got all of those 12 to 14% to buy minimum limits of insurance, the effect would be de minimis. Such a small, less than 1% difference in the cost of auto insurance in our state because of the low limits that they would be required to write and the fact that they're not a significant portion of our state's population. Now, those who drive with only minimum limits are a very significant portion. That's 40 to 45% of our drivers on the road. And so there's something called economic-only UM coverage available that generally comes with a 40% decrease in the cost of UM, and I recommend it to everyone, but I'll finish with that famous saying, description, do as I say, not as I do. I've not taken advantage of that savings on my own policy, so many others haven't either.
Well, Jim Donilon, we want to keep in touch, and thanks for your service, and I appreciate what you've done for our state, and I know last night you had a lot of people wish you well at an event that was a private event, and a guy came a long way to be in Baton Rouge who was a friend and then came kind of a frenemy, and David Vitter.
He did.
David Vitter.
I was surprised to see him and pleased that that he showed up. He said Wendy couldn't join him. She's a judge,
of course,
as you know, and a friend as well. And so it was good seeing him.
Well, Vitter, I think, is an example of what politics can do to somebody. He played it bruisingly well, and then he lost in a tough race. But he has survived. He's a smart guy, no doubt about it, and a resilient fella.
I told him that last night, asked him what he thought about my decision not to run again. And I had asked through our friend Kyle Ruckert for him his opinion, and I said, I asked for it because you are so good at it.
He was good. But he lost a race at the end, too, and very few walk away without losing a few. And I tell you what, you came back after losing some tough races to Billy Tozan in 1980.
Yes, sir.
You would have been in Congress at a young age to John Mamalitas when you were 27 years old and to John Berlinger Bro. But Jim Donilon is a survivor, and I'm sure we will speak with him many times as a private citizen. And the unvarnished Jim Donilon may be even more interesting than the state office holder. But thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Colonel Donilon.
I appreciate it.
And we're joined in studio in our remaining time by the Pride of Catholic High here in Baton Rouge and Louisiana State University and the authority on rock climbing in Louisiana. He owns Uptown Climbing here in Baton Rouge, which is across the street from our studio at the Louisiana Radio Network. And I understand, Lee Gilbo, there are only three facilities of your kind in Louisiana, and there are about 100 in the great state of Texas. You're trying to keep people fit. We need to get more people fit, and I can also see you walk the walk and talk the talk. But tell us how you made this a success. And I remember when you opened at the old Remington College location about 6.5 years ago, I thought, this will never make it. But here you are, and you're doing well. Now, I see people there all hours of the day and night, too.
That's right. Thanks for the confidence. Jim and the Pride of Catholic High is a high bar to set. We started just kind of as a passion project. So as a hobby, you know, rock climbing is got adventure. It's got a mental challenge. It has a physical component, of course. But being that there was nowhere close, I had to drive to Lafayette, an hour away, to climb anything of substance indoors, and then out of state to climb outdoors, Texas, Alabama, Arkansas. A lot of the initial, when I started climbing, was home walls. We were building climbing walls in our garages and outdoors. So this was really just something to give people the facility that I wish I had growing up.
Well, right now in Louisiana, there's the one in Baton Rouge. Yep. Uptown climbing. There's one in Lafayette.
Yep. LSU has one in their rec center.
A
very small portion of their rec center.
And I believe there's one in Ruston as well.
And there's one up north, and then a bouldering gym in New Orleans. So it's a very small
one in New Orleans. But Texas, it's the rage in Texas. Yeah. Why more interest there than here?
You know, every big city in the United States now has a handful, if not a dozen, climbing gyms. And it is really sort of the population density that gets people going, and the size of those facilities too. I mean, some of the bigger Texas gyms and California, Colorado gyms are 4 or 5 times our size. We're talking 80,000 square feet facilities.
Well, Lee played football at Catholic under Dale Weiner.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And he was in the martial arts. And this is an exercise that it's kind of like swimming. It exercises every part of your body, but you can really hurt yourself if you don't know what you're doing. It's not for everybody, but how did you get involved?
Sure. You know, in college, I was trying everything under the sun. I was playing a lot of sports and doing martial arts, and just kind of stepping into that climbing gym for the first time gave me some mental challenge on the wall, me versus the route itself. And the community that I found in climbing was really the hook, line, and sinker, honestly, making friends, planning trips, talking about the wall in front of us and kind of problem solving as a group also helped to kind of solidify this as a hobby and a passion.
And you've done it, but a listener asked, and it's a good question, do you climb mountains? Do you climb mountains independent of your own facility?
Sure, as often as I can.
Really?
Yeah. This past summer, I was in the Mecca of climbing in the United States, Yosemite, California, on a family trip, and met a good friend out there to climb some of the big walls over there. Last year, for my 40th birthday, I went to British Columbia, Canada, and the Canadian Rockies, and that was kind of a bucket list trip. But I've climbed a ton in Colorado, lived there for a year in southwest Colorado, and all over the drivable distances. So driving up to Arkansas, driving over to Tennessee and Alabama are kind of the closest places, only a 6 or 7 hour drive from here.
Mm-hmm. Now, you're 41, and you obviously are in great shape, so no problem for you. But what about age? Most of the people I see coming in and out of there are younger people, but there are some who are a bit older.
Sure. The majority are in their 20s to 30s. That's kind of our bulk of our guests and members. But we have... we have climbers from 5 years old to 85 years old.
85.
I think our top age is 85, getting to the top of the wall. It is for everybody, we like to say. We've got plenty of youth programs, so even though you can walk in and just try climbing for the first time, we've got ongoing after-school programs for high schoolers. We've got a competitive team that I coach with a couple other amazing staff. And then adult programming too. So like a bowling league, where we're meeting week in and week out to climb new stuff.
Well, we need to make Louisiana great again and get people fit. And Lee practices what he preaches. I think he can. I know he can. You've got some weights over there too, I see.
Yeah, there's
so you can bench press your weight. 877-217-5757. Chuck in Lafayette. Chuck, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I'm glad to hear this topic being discussed. One clarification, UL in Lafayette does have a small bouldering wall about 20 by 30 in its fitness center. But my question is, why don't we have more schools with climbing as part of the physical education curriculum?
All right, that would be helpful. Thank
you,
Chuck.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, the hurdle from what we found is getting into schools, getting some faculty that are on board and can assist in getting the student body and the population there. But another big hurdle is a lot of schools won't recognize a sport that's not LHSA certified. So like the big ones, football, basketball, they have hundreds of schools that participate. And until there are a certain number of schools, the sport is not recognized by the state.
Well, congratulations. Uptown Climbing began September 20th, 2017. Going strong. Hats off to Lee Gilbo. Signature
Thanks,
support
Jim.
From Subaru, Baton Rouge.